funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the Foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Ford Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's grandson, aboard the presidential yacht USS Potomac in Oakland Harbor, where Ford served as executive director of the nonprofit Potomac Association. The USS Potomac served as President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's floating White House from 1936 until his death in 1945. How the USS Potomac came to reside in Oakland, California, is a fascinating journey. Following the death of FDR, it spent a 10-year stint as a Coast Guard patrol boat, followed by service as a Caribbean ferry, Elvis Presley's private yacht, and a stint as a drug smuggler that ultimately led to its sinking while tied up on Treasure Island in the San Francisco Bay. The Oakland Port Authority purchased the derelict USS Potomac and spent more than 14 years and $6 million painstakingly restoring Roosevelt's presidential yacht. Today, the vessel is a registered National Historic Landmark. It's permanently berthed at Oakland's Jack London Square and maintained by the Potomac Association. The historic vessel offers regularly scheduled and chartered San Francisco Bay cruises. Come along and join Ford Roosevelt aboard USS Potomac. Here we are at Jack London Square on the waterfront, on board one of the most legendary under-the-surface vessels in America.
No question about that.
This was FDR's presidential yacht.
It was what he called his floating White House. Mm-hmm. I think a good way to describe it, I heard someone say recently, was it was his Camp David. There's a quote, and I'll try to play it again for you when we go in the radio room. I just found it. It's on a recorder in there, and he talks about being in the salon, and he did at least one, maybe three, of his fireside chats from the ship. And he would often say, I'm in the little room on the little Potomac. We're sailing down off the coast of Florida, getting a little break from the White House. And he would be very candid about it.
I love it. And the family connection is that your name is Ford Roosevelt.
Correct.
And FDR was your grandfather.
Was my grandfather. Eleanor was my grandmother.
That's so cool.
I mean, it is wonderful. And I did not know FDR. I was born after he passed away, but I knew Eleanor. And Eleanor was not a fan of the ship.
Oh, really?
She had a pretty scary episode when she was a young girl. She was on a cruise liner going across the Atlantic. It wouldn't have been with her mother. It was with her grandmother. And the ship hit something and was in danger of sinking. And they would get the women and children off first, whatever it is they said then. And so they would start lowering people over the side. And Eleanor was held out over the side above the lifeboat and was sort of dropped into the waiting arms of the crew. But it really scared her completely. So she decided then, I'm not doing any more cruising. But she came on this ship more than a few times to help out FDR.
And there's the legend and lore about FDR and why he specced this ship was because he had a mortal fear of fire.
He did.
And so this is a steel-hulled vessel. Yep. It was originally a Coast Guard?
It was a Coast Guard cutter. Mm-hmm. And the ship that he could have taken was wood. And he, you're right, he had a mortal fear of being caught in a fire because he was an invalid. He was in a wheelchair for most of his adult life. Mm-hmm. And he decided that wouldn't work, so he scouted around, and they found this ship with the Coast Guard, and he took it over, essentially, to be the floating White House. And pretty much as you can see it now, it's in pretty much the same condition it was the last time he was on it.
And there were a lot of archival research to recreate the salon and whatnot.
There was a lot, because as we've already talked about, it was underwater. So all the furniture that you see in the ship now, including the crew quarters below deck, all of those have been recreated and put on here from people who built the ship back from its being underwater. All the chairs where we're sitting, the fantail where we're sitting, all of this is a recreation of what it was like when he was the president and on the ship.
As exact as possible.
As exact as possible. And they've used archival pictures, video, and movies that were taken on the ship, mm-hmm. and they've been as true to the original decor as they could.
I've been on this vessel before years ago, went out on a cruise, and you're probably right there with me. You can feel spirit palpably on this vessel.
You can. I don't know if we would go on a cruise and play his voice over the loudspeaker. We certainly could.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit too much for me even. Yeah. But, you know, I think that you have the opportunity to come on this ship when you visit it, if you do, whether you're at the dockside or you go out on a cruise. It's very different than anything around here. There's a ferry boat, which is great. There's a cruise ships around here. But when you're on this ship and you're hearing the narration of what you're looking at, you know you're seeing something different and feeling something different. Mm-hmm. It really is special that way.
And this is open to the public for cruises on the bay.
Yes, it is.
You go under the Bay Bridge.
We go under the Bay Bridge. Yeah. We go under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, I remember. That's where I went.
Did you go under the Golden Gate Bridge?
All the way,
yes. Yeah, it's remarkable.
That was so cool.
I went with my wife and some friends on the July 4th evening cruise, and we left the dock at, I think, 7:30, due to come back around 10:30. And it was as foggy as you can imagine. When we went under the Bay Bridge, it fogged up completely. You couldn't see anything.
Wow.
And we got out to the Golden Gate Bridge. You did not know you were there until you were right under it and the foghorn blew. And you looked up and you saw under the Golden Gate Bridge. So we went out maybe 100 yards and came back into the bay and finally saw fireworks when we got back to the Bay Bridge. And going under the Bay Bridge, you can see all the illegal fireworks on Alameda Island, which was a lot of fun. But it was a good cruise.
So we're post-COVID world now, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
And you're reinventing yourself. You're basically doing a cold start from having been shut down for a couple of years.
For a couple of years. Yeah. I mean, the challenge is just that. I mean, you said it well. Partly a cold start, but it's a restart as well. And with my joining the organization as executive director a number of months ago, it became clear over the first few months I was here that the ship was still hidden. It's here, very visible in Jack London Square, but
front
it's
row center.
It's hidden. It's front row. You get off that ferry boat, and it's right in front of you.
Yeah, and there's
the ferry.
High-speed ferry coming in.
As we speak, you can hear it. What I decided would be a good thing to do was, if we can't get enough people in as we've reopened to the ferry, let me go out and speak to people about the ferry. Mm-hmm. I'll take the ship to them.
Right.
So I started going out and speaking to various organizations, Rotary clubs, retirement homes, and so on, of people I know that might have an interest in the ship. And I'll then present to them some stories of the ship, the tale of Elvis Presley helping the ship in his day, and then I'll talk a little bit about my grandparents, and then I make a real hard pitch, come to see the ship.
That's
because
right.
Once they do, it changes a lot.
Let's roll back in time, because it's a fascinating journey of how the vessel got from FDR's presidential yacht to here. And you alluded to Elvis Presley
amongst others. Well, when FDR mostly stopped using the ship when World War II started, because he needed to be attending to duties as commander-in-chief. And I think he was on the ship a few times. I know one of the things he did on the ship was to take the ship north to Newfoundland area and out into the water, telling the reporters who were following him, "I'm going fishing, boys. I'll be back soon." And the ship went out into the fog, and the Secret Service ships, little small boats that were following this ship, kept them away as he disappeared in the fog, and they took him out deeper into the deeper Atlantic, and he was transferred to a U.S. battleship. And that battleship took him even further out to meet Winston Churchill on a British battleship.
And wasn't Stalin there, too?
Not yet. That was when they set up to start the Atlantic Charter. And that was the plan for that one. So, because he wanted to meet with Churchill and have the conversation. And then after 4 days on that ship, they brought him back tour the ships to get to the Potomac, but nobody knew where he was. They had a Secret Service person sitting maybe where we are in clothes that FDR might have worn, waving at the reporters from the distance, holding a cigarette in his mouth the way FDR would do, and they completely fooled the reporters. FDR even wrote to his mother and said, I'm going fishing for a while, and Eleanor didn't even know. Wow. They had to keep it top secret.
They couldn't do that today.
No, they couldn't do that today. So after he was president, the ship sort of languished a little bit, and Harry Truman did not want it. So he sort of turned it back over to the Coast Guard that used it for inspecting fishing vessels up and down the coast of Maryland and so on.
Didn't it go down to the Caribbean for a while?
Eventually, it made its way to the Caribbean. Some people bought it down there to have it be essentially a party boat, to take it down there, and they didn't want it, essentially. So it somehow, I don't know the exact details, it made its way to California. And in California, it was owned by some people who were smuggling drugs. And they were doing the smuggling on a larger ship that was docked next to the Potomac at Treasure Island. And the Coast Guard impounded both of the ships.
Well, wait, back up for a moment, because there's Elvis Presley and Danny Thomas.
Yes.
At what point were they?
Danny Thomas contacted Elvis Presley, and Elvis Presley and the two of them talked. They came on board upstairs, and Elvis said, I'll buy the ship, and he did. And he said, I'll donate it to St. Jude so they can auction it off. And Danny Thomas said, well, we're not in the boat business. We're in the medical business. So he didn't want it. So the ship then went to auction and ended up at the Port of Oakland.
At some point, there was a bunch of volunteers that raised it out on Treasure Island, towed it to
Stockton. So on Treasure Island, my uncle James Roosevelt, my dad's brother, raised money from President Reagan to put money in the federal budget to start the repairs. Reagan gave $3 million, then up to $4 million, allowing for the private donors to match it. So once they had the $8 million plus match, they wanted to start the repairs, and they started the capital campaign to raise a lot more money. And then they got the ship towed to Stockton. It actually went on a large truck to get it shipped up there, essentially. And they took it up to Stockton to the naval yards, and union workers repaired the ship, got it back to seaworthiness. It took a number of years, and I think it finally launched again, repaired in 1991 or 92.
And it's been here ever since. In your restart of the cruises and whatnot, have you thought or meditated about doing like a special cruise departing from, say, the ferry terminal over in San Francisco?
We actually do some of those. We have a couple of charters coming up. One of them is going to be a very interesting charter. One of our board members is a member of the Episcopal Church over in Tiburon, Belvedere, and he wants to commemorate with us, with the congregations, that between that church and the one in Sausalito, the founding of the church in Tiburon. So they've chartered the ship, and they're going to follow a person in a rowboat from Sausalito to Belvedere in the water, filled with congregants on the ship, watching them. So they have to dock at Sausalito, which you can't normally do because the ferry's there. So we had to squeeze in between the ferry docking and departing to get this ship into that terminal. But we do that. The other one we want to do that I really want to do, I want to be on the cruise when we go over and we anchor or dock sort of at the ballpark, the Giants.
That would be cool.
That one would be cool. I'm a Giants fan, so I want to be over there.
For a game.
Yeah. I doubt if I can be on the upper deck and get a ball.
Get a fly ball.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think we'd get that close. But yeah, you'd have to really hammer it. We need Barry Bonds to do that.
And that's great PR, man.
I know.
You'd be on TV national cameras.
TV. Yeah. I think when we've done this, it now and then is seen when they flash the camera now and then of Covey Cove, and they show the kayakers out there looking for the ball.
Right.
It's a big ship, they always get that.
Yeah, well, and again, FDR's presidential yacht
is right outside the ballpark.
Cool is that?
So that's stuff we have to work on. The ship can go out. It can dock at Sausalito. It can dock at the terminal over there. Mm-hmm. We did a catering cruise for Ghirardelli Chocolate employees, a whole bunch of their staff, and we picked them up over in San Francisco. Went around the bay and dropped them off again.
Like Pier 39?
I think around there? Pier 39, yeah. I was not on that cruise. But it does go to different docks. We have to get special permission because when you walk around, you see where the ramps are to get on and off. Yep. It has to be able to fit next to that dock and the height and the tide. Mm-hmm. It's all up to the captain if we can do it.
That's really cool. Okay, back here to Jack London Square, Oakland, California. This is its home birth.
This is our birth. Yeah. Our home birth.
So how does somebody find out about...
So you find out about the ship by a number of ways you can do it. If you are Googling or Yelping, what can I do on the San Francisco Bay? I want to go on a cruise. Mm-hmm. We'll come up. We may not be the top. We have to get some search engine optimization going. Once that happens, you'll see the USS Potomac. And then you click on that, it'll take you to our website, and it'll list all the dates for the cruises, both the dockside tours, the 2 and 3 hour cruises you can buy tickets for. And you click on those, and it'll take you out to Eventbrite to buy a ticket. We sort of shifted all of our ticket selling from the office, where we had to have somebody staffing that all the time, to an online presence, which has worked out really well. It's a much different way to do it. Charters for private groups, we have Wells Fargo chartering the ship soon and others, they go through a call to the office or an email to the office to say, I have a group of 100 people, I want to charter the boat, we want to get it catered, do you have a caterer you can provide? We do all of that.
On a day-to-day basis, do you have a regular schedule when you're tied up to the shore here for somebody that wants to take a short tour?
Good question. We have what are called dockside tours. Mm-hmm. Every Saturday or Sunday, could be either day, depending on what, if there's a charter going out on a Sunday, then we won't do dockside charters. But they're usually hour to hour and a half, walking every inch of the ship with a couple of docents that will tell you all about the ship, the history of the ship. The docents, at this point, know a lot more about the ship than I do in terms of the fine details, and they give remarkable tours. You've been on those, so you know what they do. But we do dockside tours. We post all of that on our website, so you can click on there. I think a dockside tour is an hour plus, an hour and a half, is $10.
And again, a weekly schedule for a harbor cruise.
Either Thursdays and Saturdays or Thursdays and Sundays are when you can go out for a 2 or 3 hour charter.
And
or
might,
ticket cruise.
Right. And might that grow?
We hope. We hope so. I mean, the challenge is coming out of COVID is letting people know we're still here. A lot of people around this area know we're here, but getting the word out there. And what happens, I noticed, like Fleet Week is coming up. 3 out of the 4 days that the Blue Angels are flying are private charters. Uh-huh. They snapped it up 2 years ago in advance.
Right.
So the fourth one is a sort of a sale invitation, a limited availability, and I think there's 5 left. Because those, once the word got out, we've been besieged with phone calls, because every ship in the bay is going to go out for the Blue Angels in hopes that the Blue Angels will buzz their ship. And this will be out there too, so they'll buzz all the ships.
That's cool.
A very popular cruise.
Yeah. So a non-special event week, day.
Go out and buy a ticket.
What would be the least, you know, the cheapest ticket somebody could buy? I'm thinking of a family.
Good question. We were talking about that this morning, and I can't say for sure, but we're looking at ways to create packages for a family, because you know, you
like
take
a family pass.
Yeah, like a family package. Yeah. You go to Disneyland, it's $400 for a family. So we want to make a package available to say, if 2 adults and 3 kids under the age of 10 or whatever come on the ship, we'll give you a family package, a very good deal. We just have to figure out how to market it, how to package it. So that's coming very soon. We'll figure that out. But right now, if you go out for a 2 hour cruise and you buy the ticket through Eventbrite, it's $75. And we know we're probably as reasonably priced. Train time. It's going to do it again. We're about as reasonably priced, I think, as most of the cruise ships around here.
Mm-hmm.
2 hours is $75. 3 hours is $125. And we think it's a good price for what you get. And if you want to charter the ship for a private group, we'll get you the caterer that you pay for. But usually it's a box lunch. We put chairs all over the deck upstairs. You sit down here. And those are anywhere from $7,000 to $8,000 for a 2 hour. It's your ship during that time,
which is
a lot of fun. But typically, a $75 ticket will get you a 2 hour cruise. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear the narrators, the docents, explain everything about where we're going. But there's a really cool one where I'm working real hard to get a partnership with. There's another group in the Bay Area called the Living New Deal. And they're a really great group of people out of UC Berkeley that are documenting New Deal sites all over the Bay Area. They've got them already documented and mapped in Washington, D.C., in New York City, in San Francisco, and they're moving to L.A. next to map out that one. So I asked one of the guys who I've gotten to be good friends with yet so far, how many New Deal sites do you think there are in the country that you know about, that you can document? He said, roughly 25,000 we found.
Oh, wow.
And I said, how many do you think there really are, for real? CCC, the WPA, all the... He said, roughly 300,000.
I believe it.
All over the country. So anywhere you go, in any state in this country, you can find something by the WPA, the Civilian Conservation Corps. They're everywhere. So what I want to do is propose a tour with the people from that organization, which is based here, around the bay, pointing out New Deal sites all around the bay. So when you're going under the Bay Bridge, the old part, that's New Deal. A lot of opportunities to create collaborations, partnerships with people that know a lot about what's here.
Right.
And this would be the way to see it.
So a lot of your life journey has evolved around working with nonprofits and underserved communities.
Correct.
And that being said, going forward, I know you have to be envisioning and dreaming of ways of engaging with nonprofits in the Bay Area to take advantage of.
Correct.
Okay.
So I think one of the ways you do that, from my previous experience, is working with existing nonprofits and create sort of an intersegmental partnership. And maybe the nonprofit, so to speak, of Oakland Public School District or San Francisco School District. We already do student cruises, which are really great for when they start, but we could take this idea into the classroom and talk with students in the U.S. history class and talk about FDR, talk about the New Deal, because probably in the public schools today, their grandparents, if not great-grandparents, are the ones that know about it. Right. Last week I was at a retirement home over by Lake Merritt, and the room was filled with about 50 people, and I showed our short DVD about the ship. And the first question I got was, tell me something about your grandmother. People really want to know about them now, still.
Yeah.
And not just people of that age. When they realize you're sitting in a space that a president sat and a king and queen of England or a prime minister, you want to know more.
Right. Well, and myself, I mean, I'm curious. Your name, after all, is Ford Roosevelt. You're the grandson of the Roosevelt.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah. I mean, how cool is that?
I will tell you, and I think it's interesting because in my growing up with my dad was Elliot Roosevelt, the third child. And as I got older with him, you know, with my dad, even when we were visiting with his mom, either in her place in Valkiller or when she came to stay with us, I was too young and illiterate, basically, to get the questions out of my mouth I wanted to ask.
But you remember?
I remember those times very well with her. I did, you know, I was taking magic lessons as a young teenager, and I put on a magic show for her, and I put a guillotine in the middle of the dining room with her sitting right next to me, this close, and I beheaded my younger brother. But it was just a head of cabbage. But, you know, she gasped and was appropriately horrified and, you know, gave me a big hug afterwards and said, I'm glad you didn't do that. So, but it was, you know, she was a... I think the easiest way to describe her is she was unremarkably remarkable.
Remarkable in her own right is equal to FDR.
There was a great quote in our newsletter that we just put out recently, and I'll send you a copy of it. And they've asked me to now start getting involved in doing it on a regular basis. So I... Train time.
Yeah.
One more. So I wanted to include a quote by Eleanor in the newsletter, even though she wasn't on the ship a lot. So I looked up a column from her newspaper column, My Day. I'll paraphrase. She said she was recently contacted by a woman who said, your husband looks like he's going to run for a third term. Nobody should do that. They said, no man should do that, run for a third term. Why don't you take his place and run for president instead? So she wrote back and she said, no, I don't think that's the right thing for me to do. I think what I should continue doing is what I've been doing, is be of service to the greater community as a private citizen. I think I'm more useful there. So I put that quote in the newsletter. I thought it was very good.
Well, that's brilliant, because she wouldn't be in the Krausers either.
Correct. Yeah. I know. So she did a lot of good. I mean, the work she did, I've spent more time on the road talking about over the years I've been out with United Nations chapters, talking about her and her work with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. She was the architect of that, basically, the UDHR, and much of her work centered around that. In fact, 10 years after the document was published, it was published in 1948. In 1958, she was cornered by a group of reporters somewhere outside her home, and they said to her, Mrs. Roosevelt, it's been 10 years since the Declaration was ratified or adopted by the United Nations. How's it doing, basically, in the world? And she looked at them and said, well, it's in your hands now. You have to do something with it. And then she went on to this famous quote. I can't quote the whole thing, but she said, basically, where, after all, do human rights begin? They begin in places close to home, not on any map, not on any grid of wherever. It belongs in cities, in schools, in factories, where no map can see in there. If there are no human rights there, they don't exist anywhere in the world. So she went off on this tear to say, this is a document that has to be implemented. And she spent the rest of her life, and later in her life said, the work on the Declaration was the most important work of her life. She was most proud of that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I love it. So a little bit more about the vessel and the cruises, because I remember, again, pre-COVID, that other world where we came from.
Somewhere.
Yeah. There used to be wine cruises on a regular basis.
There still are. Are there? Oh, my gosh. You're going to come back for one?
Yeah. So you
In fact, we went around this morning. I went with one of the board members to look in the galley. How much wine do we have left over from the last cruise? It's in good shape. Uh-huh. We have quite a bit for the next cruise.
So we're going to take a little break, and then I'll get changed mics, and we'll do a little
quick walk around a little bit. Okay. Yeah.
Welcome to the ready to go?
So let's go through this door here. This is the door to the president's stateroom. I want to show you in here, which is pretty interesting. So this is the president's suite. And this, you can see, it's not a room that's filled with a lot of extravagant furniture. It's very basic, very simple for him to rest in here and when they were at sale. And he'd work on a stamp collection. He'd read. He'd catch up on the news that came in over the wireless and so on.
And again, this is recreated as accurately as possible.
It's all recreated as accurately as possible. They got the drawers here. You got the dresser here behind us. And it looks very much like it did when he was president on the ship. This is the main salon and the room where he would conduct a lot of business, have friends come in and so on. This is really nice over here. I want you to see this. There's a door here, which is originally the door that was a hand-operated elevator. So when my grandfather would come out of his bedroom and roll in here in his wheelchair, but he knew there were people up top he wanted to go see, he would open this door, roll in there, and then grab the ropes and pull himself up.
Oh, wow.
And then come out up on top, and we'll walk our way up to that at some point.
The dumb waiter.
It was like a dumb waiter. He had one in the White House, too. He had one at Hyde Park, wherever he lived, where he needed it, because he had to be mobile, and he could do that. And on the ship, he was very mobile in his wheelchair, because he had help with him all the time. He had Navy attendants who were with him, and they could get him over the thresholds of all the doors and so on. I've never seen it open yet, and it is a working elevator now, so we can get people who have access issues up onto the top deck.
That's really cool. Nice. In Roosevelt's day, what was the complement of the onboard crew?
While he was president, there was always, 15 or 20 naval officers on board. They were fitted with machine gun, bulletproof glass all around and so on, especially during when the war was on. During the short time he used it during the war, there was bulletproof glass everywhere. But he always had a complement of Navy battle-worthy seamen on the ship with him.
And they had their own barracks?
We're going to go down and wander to those, too. Yeah, they did. And then over here, he would be able to not stand up at the bar, but he could on the fantail where we were, he could make drinks for people there. His nasty, I think he made martinis that nobody liked because he mixed it all weird every time. But he'd mix those back there. They'd sit back there, have the drinks and talk and make world plans, literally. Wow. And then in here, they'd have family dining in here. Or it was a stateroom for visiting dignitaries to have dinner with them in here, which he did quite often. Well, we're going to walk outside now and walk over here. What's worth noting that we can only hear about is the teak deck maintained by volunteers. In fact, the entire maintenance of the ship is all volunteers who come on the ship on a regular basis. They take the handrails and sand them down where they're worn down a little bit on a regular basis, several times a month. You'll see people out here sanding and refinishing this. And they're all volunteers that love the ship, and they are passionate about keeping it working and looking like it does now. Brass railings all here keep them in really good condition. So it's a labor of love for everybody that's here. And in here, this is the cruise galley, where we have working kitchen, the sink, great refrigerator, great stove, and they all work. They're all functioning. So when there's crew on here or we're catering, some things will happen out of here that hire caterers for a charter to take over the kitchens or the galleys. There's two, one here and one on the other side. And they run both of them. This is the radio room. And this is the room that FDR would sometimes, he did it, that we know of a couple of his fireside chats from this room. But there's one, if I can get this to replicate itself, this is really cool. Captain showed me this today.
Ladies and gentlemen, the chief executive will speak to us now from the wardroom of the USS Potomac, now in Florida waters. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
I am sitting in the little cabin of the Potomac in the harbor of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, after a day of sunshine out in the Gulf Stream. That I cannot in person attend one of the many Jackson Day dinners, I regret. But it is good that you are again celebrating the memory of a great American leader who believed, fanatically almost, in the principles of a democracy based on the freedom of the ballot box. I try to get away a couple of times a year on these short trips on salt water. In Washington, as you know, the working day of the presidency in these times averages about 15 hours. And even when I go to Hyde Park or to Warm Springs, the White House office, the callers, the visitors, and the telephones all follow me. But at sea, the radio messages and the occasional pouch of mail reduce official work to not more than 2 or 3 hours a day. That may seem all important today,
and yet are forgotten by the world in a month. That means that if today the fellow next to you catches a bigger fish than you do, or vice versa, as sometimes happens, you don't lie awake at night thinking about it.
Isn't that great?
That's really cool.
So he recorded a few things, and usually from this room.
So that was his fireside chat.
Yeah, that was one of several. Right. And the other ones that were more thematic about what was going on in the world and so on. But I think he really wanted to let people hear what it was like for him to get the rest he wanted on the ship, which he did. Mm-hmm. And this room, as you can see from this, we don't have to read the whole thing, but there's an exchange in there with then the leader of Germany, Hitler, before the war, and he's saying something to FDR about a ship that was sunk. And it's, you know, that's the exact copy of what was written and what was sent to FDR.
And they had teletype.
They had teletype, they had telegraph, they had radios. I mean, mm-hmm. It was a pretty, all of this is not original, right. But it's pretty much a replication mm-hmm. of what was on the ship.
That's really cool.
Yeah, the radio room. Mm-hmm. All right, let's walk out here and we'll go up deck, up top. Don't lose your step. So up top, where a lot of visitors would come while the ship, that do now and when FDR was sailing, a lot of people would come up top and he would want to visit with them. So what he would do in that room I described below in the salon, there was an elevator door, he would climb in there and pull himself up and pop out on the other side of these smokestacks. And we'll walk over to where that is. Here we're standing in front of that FDR would pop out of when he'd pull himself up and just roll out and talk to people. Easy way to visit with a lot of people on the ship. And it took a lot of people when he was president. He'd fill up the ship when he'd go out. And there was a lot of military on it to protect him as the president wherever he traveled on it. Great way to see the water, though, from here. The views from here when you go out are just, they're just spectacular. It's a great way to visit San Francisco, see the bay, see Jack London Square.
Do you ever set up tables out here?
Come on over here. Take a look. Take a listen. We have two of these, maybe more. These are filled with chairs.
Oh, yeah.
We 16 count. We set all these up, and we put them all over the deck here, down below. A caterer can bring on tables, and if you want tables. But in the cruises I've been on where we've had food and so on, most people get a chair and just sit around or stand and eat their food out of a box lunch or whatever. But they have such a great time. When this thing is moving, when you're going out under the bridges, you've been on it, you know it's a really eye-opening experience. And the ship relatively quiet when it's running. It's not that loud. You can go in the engine room when it's running, and you'll be able to talk.
Wow,
it's just remarkable.
Was it a diesel original?
They're both diesels, and it was a diesel originally. Yeah, yep.
Well, let's move on.
Okay, let me see if we can get into the pilot house.
Yeah.
So let's go in.
Right now we're in the wheelhouse.
We're in the wheelhouse, and this is the original.
The wheel
when the ship was mm-hmm. FDR's, and they've refurbished it and put that back in here.
Yeah.
The ship though runs hydraulically, and this is more modern mm-hmm. equipment for the captain to do, and they're run by huge air pumps when we're out cruising. Mm-hmm. I've watched the captains do this many times. It's just so fun to be in here and watch how they navigate, and the view out over the bow is just remarkable. So it's really pretty a specialized room. Different captains are on here from different ships around the Bay Area. So we've got a few different choice ones that we use. And they know the ship like the back of their hand. We had a volunteer come on the ship yesterday just to help out. She was on her day off. She's a doctor, Kaiser, a pediatrician. And she took a cruise about a week ago with a lot of kayakers. They chartered the ship. And I couldn't go out that night, but they chartered it to go out and talk about kayaking. And she was on the ship as a guest of theirs. And she's a kayaker who lives over there on the island. After the cruise was over, she said, I want to volunteer. What can I do? She showed up yesterday. The captain said, I can put you to work. And she had to drill some holes in the deck somewhere. Wow. And she, after a whole day working for just volunteering on the ship, this pediatrician flipped out. She said, I want to do this every day. How do I get on the ship? So she filled out an online application. She came over and we talked for about an hour and a half as she was hanging out. And it turns out she's good friends with my son-in-law's lab director he worked with at Stanford in pediatrics. And they all know it's like a small world.
Yeah, yeah.
So she says, I'm going to volunteer on your ship. I know I'll make time. I work full time, but I can do it.
What's your complement of volunteers?
We have roughly between 20 and 35 or 40 volunteers on a rotating basis. Mm-hmm. We can never get enough, but we have to be cruising enough to have that many. And then we have docents who are also volunteers. And the other ones have gone through volunteer training and then docent training to learn every inch of the ship and give tours about every single thing, what every rivet is and who put it there. And they know the back and front of the ship like nobody's business.
Gotcha.
So we have to have a crew of docents that can also do that.
Do you ever do reenactors?
with a couple people that have come on and dressed up as FDR mm-hmm. or Eleanor. We do tea with Eleanor at the dockside. Somebody dresses up like Eleanor, and we serve tea. And there's usually 85 or more people that are on the ship for that. I know you're going to come on that one, right? So it's a really nice way to do it. What I want to start doing again, and I hope we can do those, is those kinds of cruises draw a certain audience that's interested in that. We've had an Elvis impersonator on the ship, and that one draws certain types of people that love Elvis. So it's a matter of just getting ourselves up and going again. Mm-hmm. And I want to do a blues cruise, because we've had bands on the ship before, and they go out and they cruise around the bay and playing rock and roll music or blues on the upper deck. So yeah, we do those kinds of thematic oriented cruises.
And how about period big band music pumped over the PA when you're...
We could do that. We have a PA that we could... So I'd like to get somebody like Big Fat Band. You ever heard of them?
No.
Oh, you better look them up. Big Fat, P-H-A-T. They're out of L.A. They're all professional musicians that play for Disney and all that. But their big band style of music is just heart-stopping. It's so good. Wow. And they're very tight. I'd love to get them up here and do a cruise on the ship.
Let's do it.
Let's work on it, huh? It's a lot we can do.
I love it.
So it's a great ship. I mean, I get, you know, there's just so much you can do and see and learn about the ship when you're on it and bring United Nations women on it, and there's a lot to do. It's accessible to everybody. We want to make sure anybody that wants to get on the ship can get on it.
Awesome. Ford Roosevelt, to learn more about your world, the boat, the name of the vessel, and where it is.
This is the USS Potomac. It's docked in Jack London Square at technically the Franklin D. Roosevelt slip, which is right below us, but it's docked at Jack London Square right next to the ferry building and the ferry stop. Easy to find. You can take the ferry from San Francisco to get here. And my name is Ford Roosevelt. Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt are my grandparents.
Thank you, Ford. What a wonderful day.
Thank you. It was a great day. Thank you so much. My pleasure.
I can hardly wait to come back.
Anytime, seriously. I've extended the invitation. You know when it's open.
Great. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Port of Oakland at Jack London Square aboard FDR's presidential yacht. We'll see you here.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.